And that's a very, very warm welcome to Michael Moon. I met him 2 years ago in Oakland, and we are very happy that he came over, especially for Wolf's birthday. He is an old and dear friend, and he shares with him a lot of thoughts and ideas. They both have, and that's a quote from Michael himself, a passionate curiosity, grand imaginations, and an epic sense of adventure. When in the US, Wolf is always very eager to meet Michael for a continuing dialogue about Europe and the US. Now, Michael told me that their common idea is, why not? So, why not asking Michael to come and deliver the keynote speech here? And so did Wolf when he was in California the last time. I want to introduce to you Michael Moon, but there is so much to say about him, so I think I'm going to fail, just a very few words. He's working for 40 years at the intersection of technology, brands, and personal transformation. He's working with great Silicon Valley companies like Apple, Adobe, IBM, or with companies like Disney, Nokia, Hallmark, to name but a very few. He is the founder of Gistic. It's a think tank that speeds the adoption of new technologies and helps managers to find their strategic way to the digital area. His book, Firebrands, Building Brand Loyalty in the Internet Age, 10 years ago, was a bestseller in many countries. Now he is working on his next book, Startup Ready, Inner Game of Professional Entrepreneurship. So, Michael, let's talk about all this. The floor is yours.
Sissy, thank you for a great introduction, and thank you, Wolf, again, for your endless generosity and opportunity to come here and to share some stories with you. In the spirit of why not, I have one essential question that I hope to address and begin to answer today, and that is, how do we see what is hiding in plain sight? So I submit that there is something profound that hides in plain sight here in this very moment. And I'd like to start with, here I have an iPhone. And just 6 years ago, this came into the market and has transformed the basic patterns of how we live, work, and play. The notion of having email and instant messaging and all the apps that go with this. But there's something even more profound than that. That in 5 years, this will become 10 times faster and 10 times cheaper. In 10 years, this becomes 100 times faster and 100 times cheaper. In 15 years, this becomes 1,000 times faster and 1,000 times cheaper. So somewhere over the course of these next 15 years, this will shrink the size of a kernel of rice, and it will be implanted in your earlobe or your tooth. And the notion of digital and offline and online will disappear as a meaningless distinction. We will exist in an augmented reality, both of physical and digital artifacts and interactions. This has profound implications in terms of careers. And that's really what I wanted to address today, is that as we think about the world, so if we think about just the changes that have happened in this last 7 years, and accelerate that by 1,000 times, what does our world look like in 15 years from now? I submit that it is beyond the realm of imagination. We are now at a place in the history of man when the future is no longer imaginable. The basic ideas of planning are now insufficient, incomplete, and no longer functional. The notion of having a strategic plan, the notion of having a career, is an obsolete 20th century idea. We are in a completely new frontier. And on this frontier, there are incredible things hiding in plain sight. And so I'd like to tell you a story that began in Germany in 1895. In a wonderful book called The Spirit of Capitalism and the Puritan Ethic by Max Weber. So I'd like to pick up a short recap of Max Weber's grand narrative and extend it to the 49er Gold Rush and Silicon Valley. Now, Max Weber asked the question in 1895, how is it that America had emerged as a global economic power, usurping or overpassing its colonial overlord in Britain? No time in history had a colony overgrown or overtaken a colonial overlord. And so he says, what is it that's going on over there? What's in the water? What explains how it is that America was able to do this? And he says, in order to answer this question, we have to start with Europe. And we have to start with the moral imperatives that have given Europe its sense of dominion and imperialism. We have to come up with a grand theory that explains the imperialistic intention of Europe, and then ask what a new element was added to the American sense of that. And so he goes back into that to be a European means to live in a culture and a society framed by four grand moral traditions, the Greco-Roman Judeo-Christian traditions. And from the Greeks, we get this two very powerful ideas. One, the notion of an individual. An individual has certain rights and duties. And one of the duties, in a Greek sense, is to have a philosophical world order. And one assembles a world order through argumentation and logical discourse. What it means to be a Greek citizen means to have a political world order and to argue it cogently through rational discourse, argumentation. Fabulous. So from the Romans, we get two more powerful ideas. The notion of justice. The state exists for the purpose of bringing justice to people through the imposition of civil procedures by which to resolve conflict. Law. Pax Roma is essentially an imperial design to impose laws on barbarians so as to pacify them for one purpose, and that's the second part, to tax them. Tribute. Money back to Rome. So the whole, what we get from the Romans is two powerful ideas. Law that delivers peace in exchange for taxes. Great. Now from the Jewish tradition, we get two more important ideas. The notion that God speaks to us through these prophets. And he sends these prophets every 2,000 years because he knows that it takes about 2,000 years for humans to fuck everything up. Now, the technical term that Weber used was the demythologization or the bureaucratization of the human spirit, which is a long academic word for we fuck things up. And because we screw things up, he sends these prophets, and this is the second powerful idea of the Jewish tradition, he sends these prophets as an agent of creative destruction to shake things up, to revitalize things, so that we as a people can come back into harmony and alignment with divine law. I submit that the Jewish prophet is the archetype of an entrepreneur. Every entrepreneur is, in fact, walking the same path, taking the same steps as a Jewish prophet, with the same moral intent to creatively disrupt, to render old bureaucratic structures upside down and obsolete so that we can come back into a deeper realignment with the natural order. Good. Now, from the Christians, we get two more important ideas. The notion of the universal church, that if you too accept Lord Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, you can go to heaven. However, it's not enough to be saved. You must, in the words of in the Gospel of James, go out and spread the good news. So, go out in and spreading the good news means to go off into the greater world, the new world, Asia, and impose your religion upon them, to convert these barbarians to Christendom so as to save their souls so we can tax their asses. So, Max Weber makes the case that that pretty well explains the imperial designs and desires of traditional Europe. But he said something else was going on in America that gave America even a more extreme dynamism to its sense of empire and dominion and hegemony. And he cites the Puritans, which we know here as Calvinists. Now, in the philosophy of John Calvin, our lives are predestined. So when we're born, God knows in his infinite wisdom whether you're going to heaven or hell. Our lives are predestined. And what does that mean? Well, it means that if you are healthy and wealthy, it's because God has blessed you. And if you are diseased or poor, it's because God has cursed you. Now, the Calvinists really became the unofficial state religion of America. And the notion that you work hard, that God has given you challenge after challenge by which to demonstrate your character, earning your way to heaven. You will rarely ever benefit from the fruits of your labor. However, your children or perhaps your grandchildren will benefit from your hard work. But you are condemned to a life of lifelong toil and hard work. And if you create a business and it fails, you are cursed. You will go to hell. So deep in the Puritan ethic is this notion of very conservative things. I'll only create a business that I know that will succeed. I will only borrow money if I already have the money in the bank. This breeds a very conservative mindset. Now, what Max Weber did not understand about America, largely because he was a German operating from his high point in Heidelberg, is he didn't understand English contract law, nor did he understand the importance of the frontier. Now, English contract law basically derives from the Magna Carta, and basically it says that if you own a piece of property, you are a king, you are a sovereign on your property. And if somebody takes your property, they owe you compensation. So this notion of intellectual property, of ownership, I will do with it as I will. Screw you, the king, the government, I own this. That is deep in the heart, in the spirit of what I call the American frontier. And the second aspect of the American frontier is that I will pick up from New York City or Boston, and I will go west, and I will reinvent myself. Now, one of the interesting contrasts between Americans and Europeans is that Americans have almost a blithe, naive sense of history. And you go, yes, that's right. But it also is carte blanche to invent the future. We have a healthy disregard for the history because it is irrelevant to the choices that are before me and those that are ahead of me. So part of the notion of the frontier is to strike out, to reinvent. And if you fail, so what? Keep reinventing. Now, the other thing that Max Weber didn't understand was the notion of the 49er gold rush, and in terms of how that exists in the epic narrative of America, and more specifically at the heart of entrepreneurship. So the notion of the 49er gold rush is that I go to California and I buy supplies and I go dig a hole, a mine, to find gold. Now, if I dig a hole, if I create a mine, and I don't find any gold, in the Puritan mindset, oh, I failed, I'm going to hell. But in the 49er mindset, it's, oh, I just need to go dig another hole. And the whole point is, failure is stop digging. So the notion of failure is, oh, I've quit. Great. Now, the notion of the 49er gold takes form in three cultural forms that are California in its origin, but now universal in terms of the world. One, the notion that I can go to someplace and sit in a diner, in a restaurant, and be discovered and become a movie star. Oh, overnight. Or me and my buddies can hang out in a garage, tinker with things, and whew, we get Hewlett Packard. Whew, we get Apple. Whew, we get Twitter. Whew, we get Macromedia, Adobe. So the notion that two engineers can come together and create something that ultimately is transformational. I didn't go change the world. It did it for me. Now, there's a third, and this is the one that most people do not understand about California. There's a third tribe, a third 49er gold rush tribe, and it exists in a triangle between San Francisco, a park place called Walnut Creek, which is east, and the wine country, Sonoma. And in this triangle is the triangle of cultural transformation. Many of the significant trends that have swept across the United States and the world started in this triangle. The notion of personal transformation, the notion of slow food and farm to table, Now, again, this is part of what it means to be, what it meant to live here in a village. But in the United States, this was transformational. The seeds of Starbucks, actually is called Pete's, started in Berkeley, California. And I could go on and on. So there is an ethos, there's a spirit of what it means to live in this tribe. And that is, it's my moral obligation to create new patterns for life. It is my moral obligation to experiment, to create new ways of living. It is my moral obligation to create models for how we might better live in the world, given all that's going on. It is from that tradition I am now speaking. So, it's a mindset. And one of the things I love about Berlin, and Berlin is now the place in continental Europe that has really gotten that 49er gold rush. It has gotten that mindset that we are here to create history, not suffer history. We are here to disrupt things, not build upon what has already been and reinforce the power elite and the structures of bureaucracy. It is our job to destroy, to disrupt, to make new through the power of invention. That's the spirit, and it's a matter of not giving up. It's a matter of keep trying. And the notion of failure, it's a bullshit illusion. It's just keep inventing, trying new things out.